20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers Nation? Happy Thursday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. It is a beautiful day to be chatting all things Green Bay Packers. We have a real-life official 2025 Green Bay Packers practice in the books. Day two of Packers OTAs, the first one that was open to the media. I was able to attend. I've got all the news, the notes, the updates that you want to know. We're going to go through all of it today in just a moment. Before we get there, just a real quick shout out to Paul Grant. Paul just signed up to be a brand new Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube member. Paul, appreciate that a ton. If you haven't checked out those memberships yet, make sure to do so. Also, if you can like, subscribe, comment, give those five-star reviews on the audio stations, that would be amazing. We always appreciate that a ton. And just again, always appreciate your support. And thank you so much for being here today to check out today's episode. If this is your first time, welcome in to the Pack-A-Day Podcast. Just a couple pieces of news and notes really quick before we get into, again, all of the takeaways from Packers practice. First of all, we have the official date of Packers training camp, the start of training camp. Wednesday, July 23rd is going to be the first day of Packers training camp. Just a couple notes on that really quick. Reminder, if you're thinking of going, traveling from a distance, whatever, still an awesome day to go. It's the first one. You can never go wrong with any training camp practice, but just remember, not padded as they do the ramp up period. And those first couple are usually quite a bit shorter as they sort of, again, ramp up to get ready for the larger practices with the pads and everything like that a little bit later. So just a reminder, if you're thinking of going, those are a little bit shorter and they don't have any pads, but again, still always worth going to them. And then we also know the night for Packers family night, Saturday, August 2nd. I believe it's 7:30 p.m. Central Time. I'll cover it for you right here on the Pack-A-Day Podcast as well. I likely will be attending that in the press box. And then, of course, we'll do my usual recap afterwards. But that's if you can't make it. If you can, of course, make sure to check that out. So again, Saturday, August 2nd, family night. Wednesday, July 23rd is the first day of Packers training camp. We do not know the shareholders meeting. We do not know any other dates or times for practice, but those are the two we do know. So get those things on your calendar and do what you need to do to hopefully get to those two events, which are always epic, that first day of camp. And again, Packers family night. All right, we're going to start off the practice recap by going over attendance. Five players in total that were not in attendance, which overall is fantastic. You know, you've got a non-mandatory OTA, and to have all but five players there in attendance in some capacity is a really great number. Two of them, Jaire Alexander and Elgton Jenkins. The Jaire situation is ongoing. There's no update there. And so therefore he is not at practice. And even if he was, the Packers would not have him practice anyway up until they figure out a resolution to this entire thing, because they cannot risk an injury, in which case he loses any potential trade value if they want to trade him. They can't release him then, because then they have to do an injury settlement and he can't play because he's injured. It's the entire nightmare scenario. So there's no way he would be practicing anyway until they get a resolution, but he was not in attendance. Elgton Jenkins, of course, is probably trying to avoid being in this exact same situation that Jaire Alexander is in right now next season. And so therefore he is trying to figure out something to maybe get a little bit of change in his contract. At least that seems to be the case. We don't know if this is going to be ongoing. He could show up to mandatory mini camps in a couple weeks, and this could be mostly much ado about nothing. But for now, it seems like there's a little something there, and we're going to have to continue to monitor it. Hopefully we don't get to a situation where we resolve the Jaire situation only to move into a just as epic and frustrating Elgton Jenkins situation. But here we are for now. This is the modern NFL. These things happen to pretty much every team. There's going to be drama. There's going to be contract disputes. It just is. It happens. It's unfortunate that you've got them both going on potentially with Elgton Jenkins and Jaire Alexander right now, but hopefully Green Bay can come to resolutions on both of these sooner rather than later. The other three, Tyron Herring, John Williams, and Brandon McManus. Herring and Williams, you have to think that if there was any way that they could have been at practice, these are players that are going to have to earn their way onto the 53. Herring is a undrafted free agent who will have to do everything he can to get in that conversation. John Williams, seventh round draft pick, bottom of the seventh round draft pick, their last overall pick. There's no guarantee either for him. Now, they had a much higher grade on him, they said. He'll have a real chance to make the team, no question about it, but it's not like he's got a spot locked up and he can just, kick his feet back and be like, I don't need to attend that, non-mandatory OTA. Hopefully there's nothing or, you know, emergencies, you know, related or anything like that. Maybe it's college graduations. I don't know. And that's, I think, kind of the big takeaway there. We don't know what those issues are, but, or if there even are issues, but Tyron Herring and John Williams, both not at practice. The other one, Brandon McManus, you can make an argument if you're Brandon McManus of like, what the heck am I going to do at OTAs for 2 weeks? I'm the kicker. You just signed me to a brand new deal. I'm in no risk of losing my job. We're probably not really going to do that much kicking, which by the way, today they did, or Wednesday, they did no kicking whatsoever. So you could argue like, hey, yeah, just take the 2 weeks off. We'll see you at mandatory minicamp. Again, we have no idea as to why he wasn't there, but that could be one where you could make an argument a little bit more of like, all right, if there's anyone that's probably going to stay home for a non-mandatory OTA, Brandon McManus kind of does make a little bit of sense, and I wouldn't totally blame him for not going, especially after he just signed his new contract anyway. There were a variety of Packers that were not participating in practice. We do not know any of the reasons why, other than the fact that Christian Watson is, of course, coming off the torn ACL, MCL, etc. So Christian Watson was not practicing. Marshawn Lloyd, which we'll talk about more in just a moment, was also with the rehab group, as were Jaden Yonke, Jeremiah Martin, Nesta Jade Silvera, Quay Walker, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Colin Oliver, and Warren Brinson. That was your rehab group. Again, we don't have updates on to why any of these Packers did not practice or what their injuries are. I will say this, Marshawn Lloyd was, you know, kind of jogging around, working with the trainer a little bit more. It didn't seem to be anything super serious. And we did find out from Matt at the end of practice that none of these are long-term injuries. Of course, Lloyd is going to get a little bit more of the, you know, sort of buzz around him because he missed so much time last year with a variety of different injuries. It sounded like he was clear about a week ago and good to go and doing everything in practice. So this is definitely seems like a change where he is not practicing and again is with the rehab group. Hopefully much ado about nothing. Hopefully he's back practicing next week at next week's OTAs. It's open to the media. If not, hopefully the mini camp after that. And worst case, hopefully he's back in training camp. Worth monitoring, but it didn't seem, again, from the very naked, non-doctor trained eye, didn't seem like it was anything, you know, major. Again, he was probably the one that was, you know, seemed to be jogging around and doing the most of all the rehab group. And then the other thing I'll say too is that like, there was no crutches, there was no walking boot, there was no anything like that. So hopefully good news for Lloyd and he can be back sooner rather than later. Just to recap it again, Brinson, Oliver, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Quay Walker, Nesta Jade Silvera, Jeremiah Martin, Jaden Yonke, Marshawn Lloyd, and Christian Watson were your Packers that were not participating at all due to being in the rehab group. You had two Packers who were limited participants in some way. First was Kenny Clark. The second was Javon Bullard. Kenny Clark did all the warm-up stuff, got outside, then kind of worked off to the side with a trainer, did not do any of the defensive tackle individual work, nor did he work with the team in the team drills. Don't know again what the situation is there. Great to see that he was still doing the warm-up and things like that. So he was a little, he wasn't fully in the rehab group, but once he got outside, was more working with a trainer and again, not doing individual or teamwork. Javon Bullard was a step ahead of that. He was doing, he did all the warm-up, he did all the individual work, but he did not do any team drills. So noteworthy there. And then last but not least is Savion Williams, a step up even from there. He was doing all the individual work, he was doing teamwork, but he was in the red non-contact jersey, which is a bit of an oxymoron because it's a supposed to be a non-contact practice anyway, but I'm sure they were just being a little bit extra careful and cautious. He was wearing the red jersey. I don't think this was him taking the you know, Wildcat quarterback thing a little bit too seriously. I know he's had some shoulder injuries and things like that. Probably just making sure he's 100% good to go moving forward, being a little bit extra cautious, but he was wearing that non-contact red jersey. Before we get into anything else today, let me just say this. I am not the gatekeeper of your fandom. If you want to take something that I say about Matthew Golden and run with it and say future Hall of Famer, by all means, you do you. If you want to go in the opposite direction and say, all right, great, Andy's talking about these guys. They weren't even in pads. What are we doing here? That's fine too. If that's not your cup of tea, totally get it. What I will say is try your best to kind of take all of this with some level of grain of salt, right? These were a non-padded OTA practice on May 28th, where you are going basically like 60% speed in the team drills, probably like 90% speed in some seven on sevens, and a slight, we're probably close to 100% in the 2 minute drills at the end, which we'll talk about. But even then, these are non-contact. Again, no pads. And there are rules of engagement. Like for defensive ends, for example, you're not allowed to bull rush. That's too much contact. And you're not allowed to do any sort of twists or stunts. And of course, you're not allowed to tackle. So you can't get any tackles for loss or things like that. It makes it really difficult. Long story short, and so many of these are like 7-on-7s, which is also not real football. Like, it's not... whatever happens in September, October, November, December, January, we're not going to go back to that first OTA and be like, yeah, but do you remember when this happened? This is a great starting point. It's fun to get to see some of these players. We're going to go through all the observations. Observations are fun. They're good. That's why we're here to talk about it. But again, try to keep some grain of salt with all of this, whether it's awesome, whether it's terrible, or anything in between. It's just a pretty simple OTA practice that was, for the most part, not at full speed, without pads, and has specific rules of engagement, including no contact. All right, now that that disclaimer is out of the way, let's start off with our starters on both the offense and the defense in the first team drill. Jordan Love at quarterback, Josh Jacobs at running back, Romeo Doubs and Bo Melton at wide receiver, more on that momentarily, Luke Musgrave and Tucker Kraft at tight end, Rashid Walker, Banks at left guard, Aaron Banks, Jacob Monk at center, Sean Ryan at right guard, and then Zach Tom at right tackle. So again, Love, Jacobs, Doubs, Melton, Musgrave, Kraft, Walker, Banks, Monk, Ryan, and Tom. Those are your starters on offense. Your starters on defense, Rashawn Gary, Devontae Wyatt, Colby Wooden, LVN. Linebackers were Edgerrin Cooper, Tyron Hopper, and Isaiah McDuffie. Again, remember, Quay Walker was out and not practicing. Keyshawn Nixon and Nate Hobbs were your outside corners and base defense. Evan Williams and Xavier McKinney were your safeties. We'll be right back. A couple things to note here. Anytime you get the starters in team drills, the one position I will always tell you to ignore basically in its entirety is wide receiver. They rotate those guys in so often that, you know, you get those like two, like in this case, Doubs and Melton on play one. The very next play, I think it was Wicks, Reed, and Golden. They rotate those guys so much. So you might immediately think like, Doubs and Melton? Melton, really? Don't read into it. They rotate those guys a ton. So I would not. Now, if all of a sudden it was like, you know, Cornelius Johnson, all right, that's a little bit noteworthy that he's even in that discussion, right? But outside of something like that, don't glean anything from it. They rotate their top guys through there pretty regularly. That's something that they've done throughout the entirety of the Matt LaFleur era. And then as far as the offensive line goes, you're looking at, well, Jacob Monk at center. Sean Ryan got some time at center as well throughout the course of practice. Monk got some time there. And then Jordan Morgan got some time at right guard. We'll talk about that a little bit later as well. But again, they were rotating some of the offensive line up front, specifically with Elgton Jenkins not there. On the defensive side, noteworthy that it was Tyron Hopper taking the middle linebacker role for Quay in that situation. And then again, we did see Hobbs play on the outside within that base defense. And then earlier on, Javon Bullard, when they were going through some individual stuff and kind of lining up and basically doing just sort of, it looked like maybe some install stuff. We did see Javon Bullard get some time with the ones in those situations with Xavier McKinney. So we might get a little bit of a competition there once Javon Bullard is back and actually able to practice in team activities as well. We'll see. I still think Evan Williams is the clear leader in the clubhouse there, but maybe don't rule out Javon Bullard in his entirety and give him still that opportunity once he comes back and is ready to practice that he could potentially earn that spot as well. So those are your starters. We'll do this first. The only activity during the day that was truly 100% that was, done at full speed and, you know, kind of the main event, if you will, were the 2 minute drills to end practice. So it's a kind of a weird place to put this because it actually happened at the end of practice, but then we'll kind of just go through the miscellaneous notes through the rest of the practice after this. So again, these were kind of the main event and I'm just going to kind of go through the highlights. So just to note the situation here, you had 3 2-minute drills. It was the number twos, then the number ones, and then the number threes after that. There's a minute 15 on the clock. It's a tie game. 2 timeouts, the ball is on your own 30, and it's a 1st and 10. So that's your game situation. 1:15 remaining, 2 timeouts, ball on your own 30, first and 10. So the twos came in. Malik Willis is the quarterback. Colby Wooden immediately got a pressure inside. That was one of the highlights. Willis hit Brooks up the sideline for about, I would say, 18-yard gain along the sideline. And then Brooks was able to get out of bounds with that as well. Noteworthy that LVN was taking a rep on the inside, a couple reps on the inside as a defensive tackle and some obvious pass rushing situations in that with the number twos in that situation. LVN also got some time at the edge on that drive and had a really nice pressure off the edge. Willis to Musgrave deep down the field was the highlight of that one. It was probably about a 25-yard completion. Willis put it exactly where it needed to be. Musgrave used his great size, had beaten the defensive back on the play, got good separation, and did a nice job, again, coming down with the ball for a really big play. Micah Robinson had a PBU or pass breakup on that drive. And then Willis was able to get them all the way down to about the 15-yard line, which would have been about a 33-yard field goal to win the game. They did not do the field goal. Alex Hale, they didn't get the nets out and everything like that. So there was no actual field goal attempt, but that would be a winning drive for the offense with basically minimal time left to kick a 33-yard game-winning field goal at the end. The ones were next. The big gain was a Jordan Love to Josh Jacobs throw down the right sideline, if you're looking at it from an offensive point of view. And it was a really nice play. I don't know if it was a wheel. I didn't see the whole play develop, but Jacobs gets streaking down the sideline. Love sees him, hits him in stride. I don't think Jacobs got out of bounds on that play. It was maybe the one downfall of that one, but overall they were able to get the big play and then call the timeout. There was a kind of a deep shot down the left sideline, and it was to Malik Heath with Carrington Valentine in coverage. I personally would have called a penalty on Carrington Valentine on that one. Thought he was a little bit too aggressive, a little bit too grabby. I think you probably could have called PI because the ball was in the air. Maybe you could sort of give it a half compromise and just call like a holding penalty or an illegal contact, but there was definitely too much contact there from Valentine. Probably should have been a penalty, but there was not. You had a 32-yard field goal opportunity to win at the end. Jordan Love moved the team all the way down into pretty easy field goal range. Again, no field goal actual attempt. Jordan Love was 5 for 6 on the drive, and the only incompletion was, again, that potential holding or PI or illegal contact penalty on Carrington Valentine. Then the threes got in. You had Sean Clifford to Julian Hicks on a slant for a key first down. That was probably the highlight of the drive. Clifford was sacked twice on the drive. I didn't catch. The second one was just like he was starting to scramble. It looked like he probably would have picked up the first down, but they, again, can't have contact, so they rule him dead. And then I didn't catch who it was a rollout play, and they called him down behind the line of scrimmage. I didn't see who technically had that pressure and sack on that one, but defense gets 2 sacks on him. Defense wins the series, and that was the only time that the defense won. Again, the ones and the twos both got down into easy field goal range. All right, let's get to our full sort of miscellaneous practice notes throughout the course of the day. I'll say this one more time. Take it with whatever grain of salt that you want. Matthew Golden, I thought, looked the part of first-round wide receiver. Really liked what he looked like. Fast, fluid within his routes. There's a smoothness to his game. I need to do some research. It's bothering me. There's a receiver that I'm watching him, and I can almost picture it in my mind, but I can't quite think of who it is. And it's bothering the heck out of me. I need to go and look at some, you know, a little bit shorter wide receivers. He's not short, but you get my point. He's not a tall wide receiver. He's like 5'10". Some of those 5'10 wide receivers that are incredibly fast, but also just kind of seems to glide. I love the pacing within his route. The route running looked advanced for, again, just coming in first day of, or second day of OTAs, first one that's open to the media. I was very, very impressed. First impressions are only that. They're first impressions. It does not mean where he's at now is where he's going to be down the road. Once you get pads on, that can change some things. I'm not crowning him. I'm not anointing him. But when you're a first round pick, all eyes are going to be on you. And you want to see, at least for me, like I want to see him, like, does it look like what it looked like in college? And to me, it looked like that or even better. I thought he looked really, really great. I'm really, really excited for him. And that was definitely one of my big takeaways is Matthew Golden more than looked the part. And I'm excited to see what it looks like with pads on moving forward. Definitely a little bit on the smaller stature side. Not the biggest guy in the world, both from a height and weight standpoint. He looks a little bit smaller, but that's not his game. His game is not height, weight. It's speed and it's agility, acceleration. It's the ability to cut off his routes, his route running ability. That's what he's good at. That's what he showed at the first open practice of the season. Quick rookie report. Anthony Belton got a lot of time at right tackle with both the twos and the threes. I thought he also was as advertised, big human being with great mobility. Savion Williams, again, was wearing the red jersey. Didn't see any catches from him. Saw a couple of routes run. A little bit of a stumble here and there, but overall, very explosive as a route runner. You could definitely tell the high-end upside there. Then you add Baron Sorrell. I did not get to see much of Baron Sorrell, unfortunately. Colin Oliver was not practicing. Warren Brinson was not practicing. And then Micah Robinson had that really nice pass breakup in the team drills, in the two-minute drills, I should say. And then, again, John Williams was not at practice. So just a little bit of a rookie report there. Jordan Love, meanwhile, I thought he had a really nice day. As mentioned earlier, he went 5 for 6 on that two-minute drive, had a gorgeous play to Dontavian Wicks. Dontavian Wicks outran 3 defenders, including Zane Anderson. Love found him and threw an absolutely perfect dime right in the corner. Probably would have been about a 50-yard touchdown reception. So really, really nice play from Love to Wicks on that one. There was one throw behind Romeo Doubs. Doubs still could have caught it, but unfortunately it went off of his hands, but it was definitely behind. I'll just say this about Jordan. This was maybe the most just calm, cool, collected, veteran quarterback day that I've ever maybe seen from Jordan Love. And it's probably because he actually feels a little bit more like an established veteran. Last year was only year 2. And he, of course, had some of the contract disputes that was at more of the beginning of camp and things like that. But, it felt like he was totally just knowing everything that he needed to do, just a professional practice, never put a ball in harm's way, was extremely accurate throughout the course of the day. When he had the opportunity to hit that big shot to Dontavian Wicks, he hit it in stride. Just a really great day from Jordan all the way around. Got his team into the very makeable field goal range to have the opportunity to win in the 2-minute drill. It looked like he knew all the answers to the test. Jordan's always even keeled, so I'm not necessarily gleaning anything extra from that, but it just felt like this is his team. Like he has arrived. He is the guy. And I know he has been for the past 2 years, don't get me wrong, but it just is, again, that first real tangible feel of like, they've got their veteran QB, they've got their franchise QB. And it was very clear as day. I thought he had a great practice overall and was really great to see. As mentioned, the Dontavian Wicks play was the play of the day. I thought Wicks looked really good as well. As I've said over and over, I'm not giving up my Dontavian Wicks stock, but he looked good. I thought he put on a little bit of functional strength. It looked like he was in really good shape. He's not the biggest guy in the world. He's not going to be, but I did think he put on a little bit of muscle mass and then it just looked very crisp in his routes. And here's the big thing. He looked to be playing with confidence. The routes looked sharp. He had a couple of nice moves after the catch. He was playing with a little bit of that confidence and swagger. And that's exactly what I want to see out of Dontavian Wicks. I'm still buying all the stock if you want to sell all of it. But I think he's going to be off to a really great start here and had a really nice day at day 2 of OTAs. Nate Hobbs also looked the part. He played in the nickel. He also played on the outsides, or I should say played in the slot and played on the outsides. He had 2 pass breakups and pretty minimal opportunities. He had a pass breakup on Tucker Kraft. He had a pass breakup on Luke Musgrave. So 2 times he batted away balls and just very clean, very fluid. The number 21 fits him well. He had a very clean fit with, white underneath the jersey. Looked fantastic, but the vibes were good. The play on the field was good. 2 big pass breakups. Really liked what I saw out of Nate Hobbs. We'll be right back. I talked about earlier, Bullard and Williams, there might be still a little bit of a competition there. So if you're just thinking, hey, Evan Williams is a safety next to Xavier McKinney, I still think it ends up being that way, but looks like maybe, just maybe, Javon Bullard might have an opportunity to get into that conversation as well. Your first team offensive line, as mentioned earlier, Rashid Walker, Aaron Banks, Sean Ryan, Jacob Monk, and Zach Tom, with Monk and Ryan sort of rotating back and forth between center and right guard. Jordan Morgan also got some time at right guard with the starters, and that was usually Sean Ryan at center in those situations. And then Jordan Morgan did get a bunch of time at left tackle with the twos as well. Again, don't read anything into that. He's going to compete with Rashid Walker in all likelihood all offseason long. So again, take that for what it's worth, but I also thought Morgan looked good on a couple of really nice blocks as well. So hopefully that is a step in the right direction for Jordan Morgan, their first round pick from a season ago. Hedron Cooper looked bigger, no question about it. He looked big, tall, fast, put on 20 pounds of weight from a point in the season a year ago. Matt talked about it in his press conference where at one time last year, Elton was playing around 220 pounds, or at least came in a day at 220 pounds when he weighed in, 240 this year. So it's good weight. He looks fantastic. He looks like even more of a superhero than he already did. And I could not be more excited for Edgerrin Cooper in year two. I think with the added bulk, hopefully that allows him to stay a little bit more healthy. It seems like he still has his explosion, first step, change of direction, etc. This looks like 20 pounds, a very smart weight for Elton, or sorry, for Edgerrin to put on. As mentioned earlier, Belton got a lot of reps at right tackle, both with the threes and with the twos. One of the surprising ones, if you saw on Twitter or go and read a couple of the articles out there, Gregory Jr. First of all, wearing number 38 with the dreads gave off definitely a Tremont Williams vibe. But you're going to hear the surprising news that Gregory Jr. practiced with the ones. Ooh. All right. As I've mentioned, none of these things really matter at this point. But let me just clarify something. I don't know this for certain. I can't say it 1,000,000% for sure, but I'm pretty sure. A few years back, and Matt LaFleur has done this quite a bit, but a few years back, Ray Wilborn was getting reps with the ones at linebacker in OTAs. And you're looking around and you're like, what is going on right now? Why is Ray Wilborn working with the ones? And there were some very talented players working down with the twos that were probably assumed to be ahead of Ray Wilborn. And you're like, this is really shocking. Like, Ray Wilborn has really moved his way up the depth chart ahead of some of these younger players. And look at what he's become. He's going to be a potential player at linebacker. Timeout on it. Here's what they do. More often than not, I've seen this happen on numerous occasions for a variety of different positions. They have their three main corners that were at practice, right? Not including Jair, but Carrington Valentine, Nate Hobbs, and Keyshawn Nixon. And they're practicing on two different sides of the field, all right? So the ones down here, the twos and threes kind of down there. With the ones, and it, you know, a couple guys that rotate in back and forth there too, but with the ones, you've got Keyshawn Nixon, you've got, Nate Hobbs, and then you've got Carrington Valentine. Those are your three. Those three are going to take the vast majority of reps with the ones. And there's not going to be really any left over for anyone else. There's a couple here and there, but nothing of real substance. On the other side, you're going to have Kamal Haddon, Kalen King, and Micah Robinson getting the primary reps with the twos. So think of it this way. Would you rather, if you're Kalen King, Kamal Haddon, Micah Robinson, and if you're coaching those guys, would you rather have one of those guys get 10 snaps at the ones, or would you rather have them get 30 snaps down with the twos? The answer is very clearly you'd rather have them get more reps, and you'd rather have them take the 30 snaps with the twos. So when you see this, and you see that Gregory Jr. is getting time with the ones, think of it almost as a snake draft. And this is what happened with Ray Wilborn. Your ones are going to come down here. They're going to get their top three corners. And then so that those next three corners can actually play rather than just playing a couple snaps here and there for guys that don't come out in these situations, they're going to put their next three guys down on the other side of the field. So Kamal Haddon, Kalen King, and Micah Robinson, we're all getting a bunch of reps down with the twos. And there's a couple more backups over there. And then you end up with Gregory Jr. backing up the ones. So do not believe at this point in time that there's any real thought of Gregory Jr. getting time with the ones or anything additional. The one thing I will say, though, is he didn't look out of place. Played outside, played in the slot, and he looked like a NFL corner. So that's the nice thing in those situations is sometimes you can tell very quickly and easily of like, ooh, they do not, you know, they're the weakest link there. I didn't get that feeling with Gregory Jr. So good day of practice for him, but don't get too hyped up yet of like, ooh, he practiced with the ones. There's a reason for that. And again, it's probably because he was going to get a far fewer snaps or even like some of the guys like King, Haddon, and Robinson would have got far fewer snaps if they were backing up the ones on the other side. Colby Wooden had a fumble recovery for a touchdown. There was a seemingly a missed exchange between Malik Willis and Emmanuel Wilson. It could have just been a fumble from Wilson too. We didn't get a great vantage point of it, but there was a fumble. Colby Wooden came up with it and returned it for a touchdown. Jaden Reed, Romeo Dobbs, Dontavian Wicks, Matthew Golden, Bo Melton, and Malik Heath all got times at wide receiver with the ones. All the rest of the wide receivers were down with the twos and threes. Tyler Cooper had a moment that I was just really impressed by, very similar to a Tucker Kraft moment from his rookie season. I've talked about this in the past. Tucker Kraft had a play where he was blocking. It was, again, one of the first days of OTAs, and he screwed it up. He knew he screwed it up before the coach could even get it out of his mouth. He's like, I'm going to fix it. And he went back and did it again and wanted to get it right, wanted to do it the right way. I just love that about him. You can tell the attention to detail that he has really makes him fantastic at his craft, no pun intended. Meanwhile, Tyler Cooper had a similar moment where, again, you could tell these rookies' eyes are spinning a little bit. Tyler Cooper is trying to find his way into the roster some way, somehow. And he takes a, you know, does a rep, and Butkus says, like, hey, you can't take that first step backwards. So then Butkus had to go do his other coaching stuff, you know, with other offensive linemen. So, you know, in this situation, Cooper goes over to the assistant offensive line coach, clarifies what he did, and then gains understanding of what he needs to do to make it better, and goes out and does it again and does it at a much better clip. So just, I love the attention to detail from Tyler Cooper. If you're this fringe 53-man guy or undrafted free agent, you got to do everything that you can to make an impression. And for me, that moment for Tyler Cooper, again, just showed how much he cares about his craft and he wants to continue to get better. And I love that for him. And we'll see if that amounts to anything in Green Bay. And then last but not least, versatility was on full display. These are just, again, my general practice notes here. I thought there were so many different guys playing so many different spots throughout the course of the day. Nate Hobbs was playing both outside corner and on the inside. Tyron Hopper was playing that base middle linebacker, but then Isaiah McDuffie would take that in some of the more obvious passing downs. Just a lot going on. You saw LVN kick inside. You saw offensive linemen that were playing two to maybe even three different positions throughout the course of the day. Easy for me to say. So yeah, I thought you saw the Packers' versatility on full display. It was cool to see, and it pretty much was beneficial for, I think, just about everyone in those situations. Some quick special teams notes. Isaiah Simmons worked as a gunner on the outside, got double teamed, still was able to get around, get down the field, and make a quote-unquote stop in the punting game. So that was a really cool play. Nate Hobbs and Carrington Valentine were the first two gunners. Gregory Jr. was one of the first jammer. There was one on the other side too that I just didn't catch the number. Jaden Reed, Matthew Golden, Keyshawn Nixon, Dontavian Wicks, and Romeo Doubs were all backfielding punts. I did not see Mecole Hardman doing it, which was a little bit interesting. That seems like a great avenue for him to make the team, but I did not see him catch any punts at all. And that's, again, a little bit interesting. Daniel Whalen was also very impressive during the punting drill, just nuking multiple punts and getting some down inside the 20 as well. Just a really nice day from Daniel Whalen. All right, before we get out of here, just a couple quick pieces of news and notes from Matt LaFleur's press conference after the practice. He said Jaden Reed has been outstanding, no real issue with anything, was not even aware of the whole situation of his agent reaching out. Jaden Reed also did a great job of clarifying that. He was available to the media as well after. If you want to check that out, you can find it all over Twitter and everything like that. But nothing to see here. There's no drama with Jaden Reed. And Matt LaFleur went out of his way to say he's been outstanding and said that the veteran wide receivers have taken the young wide receivers under their wing, which is exactly what you want to hear. So it sounds like there's a lot of great leadership right now in that wide receiver room, and Jaden Reed is a huge part of that. He also said Christian Watson is doing outstanding and is ahead of schedule. He also clarified that he is not a doctor and doesn't know for sure, but from what he has seen, he's very pleased with the progress that Christian Watson is making. As mentioned earlier, no long-term injuries for the guys that were in the rehab group. And then did make mention, because there was some talk about Edgerrin Cooper being that 20 pounds heavier, of somebody, I think it was Schneidman, mentioned of like, hey, everyone comes in this time of year looking like they're in great shape. And Matt was very quick to correct and say, not everyone. Now, I don't know if he had somebody in mind. I'm sure he probably did, or a couple of players in mind that were maybe not in peak physical condition. Whoever it was, I didn't notice anyone. I didn't notice anyone that was like out of shape or huffing and puffing or anything like that. So I'm sure there was a couple players out there and maybe I just missed it, but I didn't see anything egregious. I'll just put it that way. Last but not least, Xavier McKinney was asked about the Jaire Alexander situation. He just says he talks to Jaire every day. Said, quote, we all want him back, but he said he also wants what's best for Jaire Alexander. And as the Jaire Alexander world turns, we still do not have a resolution, but maybe we will get that sooner rather than later. As I keep saying, and we keep not getting it sooner, and it just keeps getting later and later and later and later. But hopefully, fingers crossed, we get some resolution soon. that is going to do it for me today. Hope you enjoyed this update of everything that happened at Packers OTAs. You know, I can only see so much, right? There's 80 guys out there practicing. There's one of me taking all these notes. Obviously, the beat writers and everyone else, reporters are out there as well doing their great job, but I can only see so much individually. I try to get you as much as I possibly could throughout the course of the day, both on social media, the live Q&A, and now here breaking it all down. Thank you again so much for being here. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Wong, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gasford, Dylan Patscott, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Jay Koner, Carlo Delgado, Willie Winkle-Sinkle, Jen Wright, The Gable Storm, Matt Geiger, and Pack Attack Cast. I'll see you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.